Hey everyone, and welcome to season 6, episode 4 of the Scrub Life podcast. My name is Chris Blevins, and I am so grateful and excited to bring you this episode tonight. Originally, as many of you may know, my goal for this podcast was to be student-driven. I wanted to create a forum where I could teach my students to work as a team, and then also allow them to get their creative juices flowing so that they could create an episode of a podcast about anything and everything that is surgery. And over the years, it has grown, that of which I could not be more grateful for. But tonight is a real shout out to our origin story. I am so grateful to introduce to you the senior students of South College's Surgical Technology Program from Knoxville, Tennessee. Just to take a side note here and get very personal for a minute, I made a huge jump at the end of 2021. I left what was a well-established and well-oiled machine in Texas and took this giant leap of faith to move to Tennessee and take over what was a small and definitely challenging program. I could not be more grateful and more happy with the decision that I made. I think that sometimes divine timing happens. I think that sometimes God or whoever you assign that role to puts you in situations that you never would have known you needed. These 5 seniors embody exactly that. I was meant to be with them, and I am grateful to know them, humbled to be inspired by them, and just impressed by their courage and their passion for what we do every single day. These students are just illustrative of the future of our profession, and I could not be in better hands, and neither could you. So tonight is a 2-part special for you all. Our first group A is, of course, anchored by Anastasia, Alyssa, and Emily. And group A decided to do their podcast on the experience of being a surgical technology student. I love their candor and their humor, definitely their honesty. And so without further ado, the first part of tonight's episode is brought to you by Anna, Gibby, and Emily. And let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to it. So stay with me, guys. Part 2 is coming up. But first of all, let's listen to a student's perspective of what it's like to be in the OR. Here we go.
Hey guys, we are so glad that you're listening in today. This episode is brought to you by me, Anastasia, Gibby, and Emily.
We are surgical technology students at South College and will be graduating in March of 2022. Today we'll be talking about the operating room as a whole.
We want to discuss a few different topics, such as the different specialties that procedures can fall under and what all they will include. Next, we will talk about how surgeons can differ in the OR. And lastly, we will discuss the different skills that are needed on a day-to-day basis to become a surgical tech.
So on a day-to-day basis, most of our things that we do is we pass instruments to the doctors, we make sure that things stay sterile during surgery, and probably the most important thing is we set up our back tables. When you set up, you make sure that you organize all of your different instruments in the order of which you'll need them for the case, and you'll organize your Mayo with the instruments that you'll need during the case. But you want to make sure everything's pretty organized, so if you do need something that's normally not asked for, you know exactly where it is, and it'll take no time for you to grab it. And most different specialties will need different setups, So for like ortho or neuro, if you're doing like a spine case, you'll probably need two back tables just because you'll need plates and screws and things to put in implants and things like that. So that's just really important to keep in mind whenever you know, are starting out and you're doing different specialties, or even if you want to try a new specialty, some specialties need more of a setup than others, or setup will take longer than other setups will.
So there's multiple different specialties that we know of. There's 13 different ones. And basically, if you're becoming a surg tech, you just have to find which one you enjoy the most. And through like clinical, we have all found that there's certain ones that we really like, and there's some that are not so fun.
Length of procedures differ for every specialty. So ortho could be 20 minutes to 3 hours long. So a carpal tunnel will probably take 20 minutes, but a total shoulder will take 3 hours. It just depends on what you're doing.
I think that even depends on whenever you get in there, mm-hmm. their anatomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or
because
the surgeon.
It could be two females and they're the same age, same weight, same everything, but on the inside their body is absolutely completely different. And it will take, the carpal tunnel you did before could take 20 minutes and this next one could take 45 because of the difference in their anatomy.
Yeah, and like, I prefer the shorter cases just because I feel like it makes the day go by faster rather than spending 3 hours in a total, because I feel like time is just dragging so slow waiting for the surgeon to like go to the next step. Some of the faster cases, it's like boom, 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 and then you're done and then you get to do the next one. So it also, like, your favorites differ mm-hmm. by each person. So I think that's pretty cool that we all have difference.
For me, I can have ortho is probably my least favorite specialty, but I have a favorite doctor and it makes it worth it to be.
Yeah. I hate, well, I don't want to say hate, but I really don't like neuro, but I was with a doctor this past week and he literally made it so much fun that I was like, if I could only be your scrub tech mm-hmm. for neuro, I would, like 100% of the day.
I think the doctors do play into which specialty you do like more. Personally, my favorite is general because I just like all the different cases that mm-hmm. general has to offer. I think laparoscopic cases are more fun. Mm-hmm. They're not as in-depth, but I think they're still fun to look at with the camera and use all the laparoscopic instruments.
Right. And, like, at different hospitals, like, do different procedures. So, like, my hospital, we're just now starting to be able to do, like weight loss surgeries and robotic general cases. Before, we only used to do GU robotic cases, and like, I love the robot, like, I think it's so cool, but like, only doing GU, I could see myself getting burnt out so fast. But now that they're incorporating different specialties mm-hmm. into the Da Vinci and the robot room, I feel like I would just fall in love all over again with the robot room.
My favorite is it's a toss-up between general and eyes, but I love eyes, and I know Emily loves eyes too.
Yes, I do.
Because it seems gross because you're in somebody's eyeball, but it is so much fun because it's the same thing every time. Nothing changes, and you could probably do, what, 8 eyes in a day, and you're
probably
done.
Probably more. We used to do a lot
in like an 8-hour shift.
They're so quick.
8 eyes.
Oh, yeah, because they're like 25-30 minutes. If it's a really tough eye, it's maybe 45.
Oh, we do a lot of cataracts at my hospital.
We do too.
So they're like really quick in and out.
That is one of the one things that like my hospital does not do is like eyeballs, and I don't think I'd want to, just because
it's so much fun.
I think the thing that's intimidating about eyeballs for me is that like all the instruments seem like they're so small.
They are.
Like I feel like I would struggle so hard, especially when you're double gloved like you're supposed to be. Like, I just feel like it's so hard to touch stuff when you're double-gloved.
Like, when you think about it, and it's hard to get the passing down because you're not, like, smacking it into their hand. You're, like, laying it in their hand.
Because
like,
they're under the microscope?
It's like they're eating.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, one of my eye doctors was like, it's like eating a plate of food. You want to delicately, like, pick it up. It's like, she's like, it's like you're eating soup and you don't want to spill it.
Oh, okay.
It's
okay.
Like you're delicately laying it in your hand and picking it up and using it.
Yeah, see, that's why I like the neuro, like one of the things I liked about the neuro doctor was like, he was like, I want to hear you smack it in my hand. And I was like, this is the day I've been waiting for. Like, this
like
is the day.
I like to delicately place the hands because I don't want them to be like, look at me because I put it in their hand too hard. And then they'll be like, that hurt. I would probably pass away.
Even with eyes, I feel like some of my doctors, they like it to just be placed on the Mayo stand. And they don't want it to be passed, I guess, because the instruments are so fragile.
Oh, so they like to self-serve? Yeah. Is what I call it.
Yeah, they like to self-serve, yeah.
Yeah.
Mine like it to be placed in their hand, but they don't want me to take it back from them. They like to lay it down. Because they would rather lay it down and be ready with the next thing than have to wait for me to grab that back and then give it to them.
So, like, I mean, it's the same for everything, but, like, surgeons like different things. So,
yeah.
It's
because for the same specialty, the different, different surgeons use different things. Like, for general, you could have three general doctors, and it could be a laparoscopic gallbladder, and it is different every time.
Literally. Or, like, the same surgeon.
Yeah, and it'll be, like, for me, last week with an ortho doctor, we did a total shoulder on a Thursday, and then that Thursday before, we did a total shoulder, and nothing was the same. We didn't use the same trays. We didn't use the same pack. We didn't use nothing. The only instruments that we used that were the same was a tin blade and a Bovie, and that was it.
Yeah, it's funny how they can really differ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In between.
And, like, I also think that has something to do with their personalities. Mm-hmm. Like, going back to, like, I really don't like spines. Mm-hmm. Just because the first time I had done a spine with one doctor, it wasn't fun. Like, he was very quiet. Like, it was basically silent. He didn't want any, like, music in the OR or anything like that. But then when I had the new neurosurgeon that I'd never worked with, and I worked with him for the first time, he had, like, really good music, or at least, like, music I like playing, and he was super talkative and, like, asking how your weekend was. And he was, as a student, sometimes I feel like we're a ghost. Mm-hmm. Like, no one really talks to you. But he was like, since you're my lead scrub on this case, like, I'm going to talk to you. And he was like, how was your weekend? Like, what did you do? And as a student, like, with those questions, they're kind of a double-edged sword, because you don't want to be rude and be like, fine. But, like,
but
it's also not your space.
But you don't want to get too personal.
Right. Yeah. It's not your space to get personal yet, because you don't work there. But I felt like it was super nice that he was trying to have a conversation with me and not just kind of, like, ignoring me. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the other surgeons that I've worked with do, until you've worked with them like 4 or 5 times, and then they'll eventually talk
like
to you.
My favorite thing about my hospital is we have 2 general surgeons, and they have students 24/7, like PA students or med students. And so when you're in there as a student, yeah, they talk to you and they show you things, but they don't go as in depth, because honestly, we don't know that what they know. We don't know what a PA is gonna know. And so they go more in depth, and you get to learn more. And then when you're in the next case with them, and maybe their students, like, the last round went and they're waiting for the new round to come in, and you talk to them and you get to tell them and make conversation about the things you've learned from them, it makes it 10 times better.
I also
because
feel
they, like, feel like a proud parent.
I was about to say, I feel like they get not really, like, happy, but happy whenever you're like, oh yeah, I remember you told me about this, and I did this with this other doctor, and he was super impressed, so, like,
yeah,
thanks. And, like, every time I leave an OR, like, if it's with the same surgeon, I wait till the end of the day, but if I have different surgeons throughout the day, at the end of every case, I look at the surgeon, and I say, Dr. So-and-so, thank you so much for letting me learn in your OR today, because, like, doctors can say, like, no, I don't want a student in there, and while that will make it worse for us because we can't learn, I get why some doctors wouldn't want students. So that's why I try and, like, thank them and be like, thank you for letting me learn in your OR today. Even if they don't teach me anything, even if they're the silent ones or whatever, even you just still, getting the clinical experience in their OR, I just say thank you.
Because you learn something every day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Absolutely. I mean, there's not a day that goes by that I don't learn something.
I like to make notes, like, after a surgery, I like to write down things that they really like to use, like, instruments or, you know, certain things that they like.
And especially, like, picking up, like, ortho doc, he calls a retractor Batman and Robin. So if you pick you know that retractor, who cares if you know the real name? Like, if you know it as Batman and Robin and you say that to him, he's going to be impressed.
Right.
Because you remember.
About
without
him.
Without being told again.
I mean, it's important to know what the real name of everything is, just because you will get that doctor that's, like, very much by the book and will ask for, like...
Yeah. But for that one is, doctor...
It'll make it feel special. Yeah.
I feel like all doctors are different, too. They might come in a totally different personality than when they leave, because something could go wrong during the middle of a case or, you know, anything can happen once you get into a procedure. So you always have to be mindful of that.
Or, like, it'll keep up their mood if it, like, went really well and they, like, came in thinking, like, man, this patient, like, was super tough to diagnose or, like, is super difficult in the... office or whatever, and they're like, they just come in gloomy, you know. You've had those doctors where they're like, gosh, I just don't want to do this case. And then when it goes so smoothly, whether it was because of you or just because of it in general, and then they leave so happy, and then the next case is even better because they're just already in that good mood. It's just
because if you have a good day and the doctor's happy all day, that will carry you into the next day.
Yeah,
because if you have a bad day with a doctor,
that definitely carries.
It will carry into the next day. Like, I know they say leave it at work, but it's hard because you're trying to make everything possible for them, and then when they're in a bad mood, it takes a toll on you because you're like, dang, I'm trying my hardest here, right? You're in a bad mood.
And I'm not saying that, like, what I'm about to say this, like, assistants are super important, like the person standing across from the doctor, but, like, really, we are
what's making
super important in there. Like, if we are having a bad day or we are not on top of our A game and, like, we can't hand them the right instruments, or, like, we are fumbling around, or we don't organize our setup, like, enough, or we don't do research or whatever it is, if we slack, that makes the rest of the team slack. And I'm we're not the leader at all, but, like, we're the starting point of the surgery.
Because if it wasn't for us and the circulator, there would be nothing. Because... basically, doctors are like little kids. You have to hold their hand and lead them through everything to remind them, did you sign the consent? Have you talked to the patient? Do they know what's happening? Do they know what to do? Like,
all the
that
circular
stuff.
It's basically teamwork.
Yeah.
Like, you really have to focus on the teamwork in the OR and be like, asking everyone, is this done? You know, you know, so you're always ahead and ready for the next...
And not one person is important. Like, every single piece of the OR is super important. Without the anesthesia person, like, you wouldn't be able to get your patient to sleep. And then we're back in, like, what is it, like, the 1500s, where four people have to hold down the patient as you're operating. Or, like, if you don't have the surge tech, like, the instruments, the doctor's not going to know how to organize anything. Or, like, without the assist, the doctor's going to be struggling to see anything without someone holding a retractor, doing whatever. Without the nurse, if we forget something, we can't ask them, like, hey, could you please, like, give me another Vicryl open? Or, like, hey, can you please get another Bovi? He dropped it. Or, hey, I need more towels. Or, like, whatever. Everyone together is so important, and that's what makes teamwork, like, probably the most important thing in the OR. But, like, another important thing is communication. Being able to not be afraid to look at your circulator and be like, hey, I just dropped that Vicryl you gave me, like, can I get another one? Or, like, hey, the dog keeps dropping the laps, like, can we get another pack? Like,
and even being able to say, hey, I contaminated. Like, it's not a... if you recognize that you contaminated before anything happens, it's fine. But if you know that you contaminated and you never said anything, that's when it becomes dangerous, because that patient could get an infection. And if you don't have, and that just leads up to having confidence, because if you don't have confidence, you're not going to be good at your job, because you have to be confident. It's a scary situation. Yeah. You're working on somebody and it's their life at risk. And when you have to be confident in what you're doing, you have to know your stuff, and you have to be confident to be able to do your job.
And in, like, some of the heart things, like, I've been able to, you know, second scrub in, you know, hold a retractor here or do whatever there. But because it's very hard as a student to first scrub a heart case. But even in a heart case, like, you have to be so confident, because those heart doctors will know if you're not, and they will call you,
like,
out.
Like, they can smell the fear on
you. They literally can. They'll walk in the OR and they'll be like... what's going on.
Yeah, and it's so funny to say that, but it's the truth, because if you're scared, they know it, and they will not take you seriously.
Or they'll be like, okay, why is she nervous? Like, what is going to happen mm-hmm. that she's nervous? So then, not that they'll get nervous, but now they're on high alert. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just awful.
You just have to be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Just go through the steps that you know and be
confident. And if you don't know, ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your other scrubs at the hospital are there for you. Like, no matter if you're a student or an employee, once you start, like, if you don't know, ask. Because as for me, I'm an intern at my hospital, so I get to scrub. I go to clinical, and I'm an intern. So it's completely different as a student because, yeah, they trust you, but you're a student.
You're still being watched.
Yeah, but when you're an intern, you get that freedom to, yeah, you're still being watched because you're not certified, but they give you the freedom a little bit more to be able to do it on your own. And they, like, you know, you can ask them. Like, I had no idea what to do for a port the other day, and I was completely lost. I was scared to death, and then you just ask somebody, and they'll tell you, and they don't care to walk you through it.
Yeah. I think as a student, like, in the very beginning, I didn't want to look like I didn't know anything, mm-hmm. even though, like, I knew some things, but I definitely didn't know as much as I know now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, like, the preceptors, like, they are not there to scare you. They are not there to, like,
be mean.
Make you feel dumb or be mean. Like, they are literally only there to help you. And if you ask questions and you are engaged, it just mm-hmm. makes a preceptor like you even that much more. Like, I had a preceptor for almost a whole year, and she recently quit at my job. And now we're, like, Facebook friends because mm-hmm. she doesn't work at that hospital anymore. She's yeah. not my teacher. She's not my preceptor. But you get to get almost like these connections mm-hmm. that as an employee you would still get, but you don't get
all the OR time
yeah. with them. Yeah.
You get to build a special relationship yeah. with them.
And then that right. goes for doctors too. Like
yeah.
now being in clinical and going to an internship, I have doctors that specifically ask for me. Like both my eye doctors ask for me. I have an ortho doc that asks for me. And it just makes you feel good because after all this hard work and stress, you're seeing it pay off, and especially because of the connections and friendships and all the things you've made happen for yourself, and people are starting to see how good you are, and they respect you more for it.
I think that's my favorite part, is like my hospital, even though I'm still a student and I'm not an intern like Gibby, I wish my hospital did that intern thing, because I would literally do that in a heartbeat. But like, I've been pulled out of cases that I've been put on for the day because a surgeon mm-hmm. had, like, a thing, and he was like, oh, I want her in my room. If, like, I'm going to have anybody in my room, it's going to be her. And even as a student being requested to be in a room, like, I mean, it's kind of an ego boost. Yeah. But it's like, wow, I'm doing my job well mm-hmm. enough for a doctor to recognize it. And, like, doctors are intelligent, so don't get me wrong, but when they're on a pedestal almost mm-hmm. it's like their approval means like
it means more.
A lot yeah.
yeah
yeah
it gives you a lot more confidence in the setting and when right. working with them and stuff.
So but confidence, teamwork, communication,
they're all very important.
Surgical conscience is mm-hmm. like so important. That's what Gibby was talking about, like if you mess up, like just don't be it. Afraid to be like, hey, I touched my cuff on this corner. Can I get
a sleeve or a new gown or whatever
yeah.
you need?
Yeah. Or, like, can I get a Tegaderm to put over this corner or, mm-hmm. like, whatever? It would just be a lot better. Mm-hmm. And then that also, it's not that whenever the first time I contaminated where, like, my glove had ripped or whatever, mm-hmm. I was, like, staring at it and I didn't touch anything, but I was like, they're gonna get so mad at me that mm-hmm. I just contaminated. And no, they were so appreciative that mm-hmm. I had said something rather than just said nothing.
Because if you don't say anything and you just carry on, what if that patient gets an infection and worst case scenario that infection is so bad that they die? That's your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because with this job you can't play around. Because,
you have to keep the patient safe. Yeah. That's the number one priority when it comes to our job.
You have to act like that's your mom or the most important person in your life on the operating table, and you want to take care of them like they're your family.
Yeah.
So overall, Surg Tech is a really fun job, but it can be extremely scary. But it's all worth it in the end because you know that you've done everything you can to make that patient's quality of life better, mm-hmm. and that they're going to be better moving forward and not have to, you know, hopefully not have to come back.
Before being in this program, though, I had no idea what a scrub tech was. Like, this is probably a terrible example because the OR is nothing like this show, but in Grays, like, Bogey is the scrub tech, but like, and you see her, and like, people, like, viewers love her, mm-hmm. but like, you never really knew what she did or like why she was there, or like, whatever. And so, I had always known that I wanted to be in the OR. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew I wanted to do something medical, and I knew I wanted to be in the operating room, yeah. but I didn't want to be a surgeon because that literally takes 15,000 years to do, and I want kids. So, I was like, and I know some people can do it, I just know I would not be the mm-hmm. person to do it. So when I talked to my advisor at school and I was like, hey, I want to do something medical, like nursing isn't it.
Yeah.
And I want to be in the OR. And then they told me.
Yeah. And then I'm not touchy feely. I don't want to hold your hand.
Right.
And pet your head and make you feel better. Because that's not me.
Yeah.
And I want to get in there, get my hands dirty, and fix it.
We're kind of a behind-the-scenes person.
Yeah.
We set everything up, and no one really knows who we
are. You're like the backstage crew at a concert.
Yeah.
You're the one that puts the lights together.
And the costume, and the makeup,
but
and
it can't run without you, so literally. You're very important.
Right in the middle, and everything, for everything to happen around you, you have to be in the middle to make it work.
And I just think, like, if someone out there is listening and you're like, you don't even know how you stumbled across this mm-hmm. podcast, but you're like, I have no idea what I want to do, but I love, like, the OR, like, I like Grey's Anatomy, and I want to see what it's mm-hmm. actually like, because it's literally nothing like that at all. But if you're just, like, curious, like, give Surg Tech a try, mm-hmm. because, like, it's probably the best decision I could have made.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And especially, like, Chris being such an awesome instructor, uh-huh. I don't think I could have asked for a better experience.
Me either.
So. All right, everyone. I really hope you enjoyed part one of tonight's episode. Congratulations to Anna and Gibby and Emily for doing such a fantastic job. I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait to introduce our Group B to you all tonight. Madison and Jesse took forth the effort and the courage, I believe, to talk about something that I think is incredibly important to our profession. I also think that it's a topic that we avoid and maybe hasn't gotten enough airtime. Tonight, they are going to talk about unprofessional banter in the operating room. And I really admire and encouraged them to do this. I am so thrilled that they did the fantastic job that they did. So I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to let their words speak for themselves. And these ladies know how incredibly proud I am of them for being so honest. So without further ado, here's Group B, Jesse and Madison, and unprofessional banter in the operating room.
Hey, my name is Madison.
I'm Jesse. I want to start off today by saying a big thank you to our favorite professor, Chris, for allowing us to do this episode.
On this episode, we are going to talk about unprofessional banter in the operating room, and we will touch on topics of equity, diversity, and inclusion, also known as EDI. In lab, as surgical technologist students, we are taught how to gown and glove, set up our back tables, how to gown and glove other people that are coming into the sterile field.
We learn about roles, what the surgeon does, what nurses do, what part anesthesia plays, and more importantly, what we as surgical technologists do.
But I think the one thing that we can't really educate students on and other people who are coming into the operating room on is the conversations that are had around us and the distractions that are around us. Going into the hospital, it's not necessarily a big wake-up call, but it's definitely
a big shock
to students who have never stepped foot into an operating room.
Not saying that all conversations are bad. It's just you sometimes get people who like to talk about politics and talk about racism and things that are going on in this world, and a lot of those people tend to be very opinionated, and it's hard to comprehend and deal with as a student specifically. And as students, we really depend on our preceptors. You know, they show us the ropes, they get us in there. Our professors can only do so much, you know, and teach us so much in the lab and be there for us, and those preceptors really shape the future for us.
I think if our preceptors engage in these bad conversations, it makes it harder for students to learn, and it can be an uncomfortable environment for students to learn in. I personally have had conversations around me and with people outside of local places and like outside around the country who have talked about religion and politics happening in their operating room, of people having fights.
For sure. I mean, we've done research of our own. Like, I know I joined multiple Facebook groups who talk about things like this and who are open, and there's just a time and a place for conversations, and I feel like the OR is the last place to be having certain conversations. There's been multiple experiences of not only surge techs, but I mean nurses have been put in weird positions and awkward conversations in the OR and, you know, at work, and it's just not cool.
I think that having the conversation of how to handle an appropriate conversation in the operating room during lab would be really helpful for students going forward. I just think that there needs to be a good way to go about having the conversation with students and portraying this unprofessional behavior in the right way.
For sure. And another thing too is, like, I feel like people who are already in the workforce, like for healthcare, should continue to work towards that and not lose those capabilities to withhold those conversations.
Right.
You know, yeah, students learn and all this stuff, but I mean, 10 years down the road, I mean, preceptors learn about this stuff and then they turn into what you're not supposed to turn into, you know, and have those awkward conversations. I know we both joined a Facebook group, you know, starting with this program to get a better grip on everything. What are some stories or topics that you've seen stick out to you?
I clearly remember a story about a tech being in the room with a patient and there being racism towards the patient, and not really anybody in the room could have a conversation about it. It seemed like a tough topic for the tech to talk about, being a person of color and not knowing how to approach the conversation with the surgeon or the nurse having the unprofessional conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I have also heard stories of CRNAs telling the patient and reminding the patient that the entire team is there for them, even though there is conversation going on around them that probably isn't appropriate for the operating room. Mm-hmm. Another story is having techs and nurses and other team members out in the hallway having a screaming fight about politics and pushing their views on each other and disturbing not only the people in the hallways, but potentially people in the operating rooms.
For sure. And another thing too is like, we're supposed to treat our patients as if they were our own family, because the healthcare facility is a patient-driven job. Like, what if those patients were awake? What if they were hearing these conversations that people are having? What if family members were in the room? You know, when, perfect example is, you know, a C-section. The father comes in and gets to be with the mom. Majority of those conversations in the OR for C-sections are not going to be the same as a robotic case or a conversation being had in neuro or hearts, general, other GYN cases where the patients are asleep. But why is it that when the husband is there for their child's birth, we can withhold those conversations? Right. But when we're all in there, these crazy conversations are being had, and it's just not...
I think it's sad, too, that there are people out in the workforce working in the operating room that will ask, is the patient asleep?
Mm-hmm.
And then the conversation goes completely 180, and it goes very negative.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I've even had, you know, other people, like when we were talking about that Facebook page, I read a story of a student surgical technologist talk about once the patient was asleep, it was either like anesthesia or it was a nurse or something. Once the patient was asleep, they were talking about the patient and talking about their religion or something that they had said in pre-op they had brought to the OR, and were talking about it like as the patient was laying there. Our job is to take care of that patient. Our job is to take care of their well-being when they can no longer do that. I mean, anesthesia has put that patient down. Right. There's no way they can take care of themselves. There's no way they can stand up for themselves. That's our job. Yes, surgical technologists are supposed to maintain sterility, and we work with instruments, and we're a surgeon's right-hand man, and, you know, our nurses are charting, and they are circulating the room, you know, getting things that we can't, and the surgeon's fixing whatever problem or helping the patient in whatever way, and anesthesia's maintaining, you know, the patient's
vitals and
everything, basically life. Like literally life. So it's like, why, those are not our only roles. That's just part of a team. That's what, how we play, but we all come together to do that for that one specific thing, being the patient.
I think a lot of people forget too that hearing is the last sense to go when we are under anesthesia, and I think that's why a lot of people ask, is the patient asleep? But I personally, I don't like asking that question.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we gonna...
Why does it matter?
Force a conversation that isn't going to be healthy for the environment of the OR.
Yeah.
It just brings a lot of negative energy that isn't wanted or needed.
For sure. And circling back around to students and preceptors, so not only is our main goal the patient, but we have so many students learning. We have residents. We have, you know, baby techs coming in. We have, you know, radiology teachers and their students coming in. And we have, there's so many roles in the OR that it's like, it doesn't just make the OR team look bad for having those conversations about the patient. But there are multiple, you know, coworkers and peers that are listening to this conversation and are completely uncomfortable. by all means, this conversation is not supposed to be targeting, like, specific people and specific conversations, because not all healthcare workers are like that. But it's just a topic that is talked about a lot in the OR, but it's not addressed, and it's not going to be talked about of why it's bad and why it's such a negative thing. But it's completely fine to talk about negative things in the OR. So to me, that doesn't make sense.
I think it's interesting to, I want to go back to the topic of religion, how just because you practice a religion doesn't mean that everybody else in the room practices that religion.
Exactly.
Yes, it's okay to say that you are religious, but to push other views and your views onto someone else is not okay.
Oh, no. And well, everyone has their right to their own opinion.
Absolutely. And that goes back to politics as well. I think that we should not force any view on anybody else, or even bring up the conversation of sometimes what even's happening in the world at the moment. There have been a lot of big political happenings in the last few years, and that can come up a lot in the operating room, and I just don't think that that is professional.
Not at all. I 100% agree with that.
I think to go about it in the right way would be to tell somebody, hey, I know that there's a lot going on right now in the world, but let's just try to stay positive about things and let's keep the focus on our patient today.
Well, and everyone, I'm sure everyone's heard this, but if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. That goes for this topic too. If you have nothing positive to say, why say anything at all? I mean, if you're going to be negative. And we have a patient's life on our table. Why have such negative vibes in that room? It doesn't make anything better.
There's no need. And as medical professionals and ethically, we're supposed to do no harm to our patients. In a sense, we are doing harm to our patient because we are creating room for distraction. We are creating room for
errors
and negative pathways of conversation. And that's not a healthy work environment where people want to work.
Not at all. And we choose this line of work. We go to school and we have student debt, and we go through all the sleepless study nights, and we go through all these clinicals, and we have up and down, and it's emotional and it's hard. And there's great times where you're excited and you know, end up making lifelong friends out of school and
Absolutely.
Things like that. But it's like, we choose this. Why would we choose this and know that a patient comes first? And again, we are a very patient-driven workforce. Without patients, what are we working for?
Right.
Like, what are we doing? If there's not a patient, there's no work. So it's like, because we pick this, why are these conversations being had in the OR?
Right.
So another thing is, when we were presented with this assignment to create a podcast episode, we both immediately jumped to this topic. Very hesitantly, in a way, but also very excited, because this is a controversial topic.
But it's a topic that we're both passionate about. We are both very big on inclusion and equality and allowing diversity in our lives and creating pathways for those things to come to us. It was definitely a very controversial to present and talk about with Chris and our peers.
Even just writing up the proposal, because I know you came over and we were like, where do we even start with this? How do we open the door for this conversation, and how do we get the ball rolling? Because it's so touchy, but it's a much needed conversation.
And there's not a lot of research out there to go off of. What little bit we did find, we also had to reach out to social media groups and
preceptors
and people from around the country to rely on stories and information about these topics and experiences and how they wish that they would have had training and education on how to have these conversations in the operating room.
Or even just having somebody to rely on and be there and have a conversation, be like, hey, this conversation was had in the OR today, and this is how it made me feel. And yeah. This is kind of what went through my head, because it is so controversial and it's such a touchy and scary topic. Sometimes you don't know who to turn to.
I think creating relationships with people that you don't know, or relationships with your professors about these things, can be really helpful. And reaching out to researchers about diversity and equality might be a better way to approach this topic and make it more of a well-known thing that happens in the OR, that these conversations are bad, and maybe how to train professionals working in the OR on better behavior and better treatment for patients and their coworkers.
And not only their patients and stuff, but how it makes people feel. And you know, the OR is not a place for the weak, without a doubt. But there's a line, and with certain conversations, you're crossing that line, you know?
Absolutely. It's definitely not a place for the weak, but all strong people have their breaking points. It can be difficult at times, and if there were better ways to go about learning, I think it would make these stronger individuals even stronger. And
oh yeah,
it would make the relationships in the operating room stronger and the conversations more positive and patient oriented. And I just think it would be a wonderful thing to have more education about these things.
It's very important. It's a conversation that's hard, and it's scary, because sometimes you don't know how one is going to react, but sometimes you have to be that person to step out of the box, and you have to do it, because if you don't, you know, who will? That's what you have to look at it as. And sometimes you help people without even knowing it. And like these Facebook pages and talking about experiences and asking these questions and being open and talking about these things, you know, even in the comments on Facebook and social media platforms, you know, there's still people being so negative towards other people when they're simply asking a question or, you know, talking about their experiences and being vulnerable. You know, it's like,
it takes a lot of guts to tell those experiences on a social media platform full of people who, although they do work in the same environment, may not have the same experiences. And they have the same similar stories, but not exactly the same. And it's very brave for people to actually go on there and tell their experience and ask for help.
Yeah.
And ways to go about having conversations.
And it's not just for the workers, like, actually working, you know. There's a lot of students. We are students currently, and we've both joined, you know, social media platforms with groups driven for surgical technology or specifically talking about the OR and stuff. And so it's like, if you shouldn't have those conversations in the OR, you shouldn't have them on social media. There's a time and a place for every conversation, and this one is talked about a lot, but not in the right manner, because it's always specifically about the racism and or being racist or having these political views and being very opinionated to the point where you're pushing your opinion on other people and making other people uncomfortable. But it's never on the other side of why you shouldn't have these conversations or what is negative about them. And, you know, the outlook and the whole perspective of the topic of that conversation.
Right. I think that having to do this podcast as our final project really almost took us to our core.
No joke.
Allowed us to go out and hear these experiences. Although, like, we're students and we've only been in clinic for close to a year now, and we don't have as much experience or anything as a lot of these techs do. And it was really eye-opening to a lot of the conversations around the country that are being had in the operating room and how they can be changed. And it was definitely a good experience to be able to do this and learn from it and hopefully change the way that conversations are had in the OR.
I definitely couldn't have said it any better. It's just, it made us think deeper. It made us think in a wider view of everything, not just the diversity aspect. It's the inclusion of, you know, having those students and accepting them as students and treating them as students and being preceptors and, you know, being the best preceptor you can. You know, not everyone is a great teacher, but if you have the effort, students see that and we learn from that. And it's like, it's very much an eye-opener to have done the research and thought about this topic very much for this podcast.
Yes, we are very thankful to Chris for allowing us to do this and allowing our peers even to do these podcasts and share our experiences and our stories and to hopefully better the way that education is in the operating room.
I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I also hope that it made you think for a minute. I know the operating room is our daily 9-to-5 job, but I hope that you paused and maybe thought a little bit before you or any of your colleagues engaged in kind of water cooler behavior. I also hope that it made you stop and realize that, hey, there are young ears listening. The future of our profession is in the operating room with us as students. And we have a job as preceptors, and that is to mentor them, to show them what it means to be a patient advocate, and to show them what the profession of certified surgical technologist looks like. I think sometimes we can tend to forget that. So, to summarize tonight, the five seniors for South College's surgical technology program could not make me more proud to be their instructor. If you too would like for your surgical technology program to utilize this podcast, please go listen to season 6, episode 3, where I lay it all out there. I would love to hear your students on my podcast. I would also love to be able to promote your surgical technology program. There is a nationwide shortage of surgical technologists, and, we need to get the word out there, not just about your program or my program, but the field of surgical technology as a whole and how amazing and noble and badass our program and our profession is. Please feel free to visit any of our social media pages. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at the Scrub Life Podcast. I would love to hear from you. So please, if you ever have any suggestions, comments, concerns, or polite things to say, you're more than welcome to email me at thescrublifepodcast@outlook.com. And for more information about today's episode, always, please feel free to reach out and check out our podcast webpage. It's the Scrub Life Podcast. www.ohrsurgeon.wordpress.com. You can find links to all of the show notes for not only this episode, but for previous episodes, as well as links to listen to them. From my house to yours, and from my heart to yours, from an absolute grateful person, thank you so much for listening to the Scrub Life podcast, for supporting me, for supporting our students, and supporting our profession. I wish you all a great night. And with that, I will see you next episode.